Now, the shotgun start in golf is full of mathematics. There's a lot of setup work that we have to do in order to make a tournament work. So I'm going to demonstrate to you just exactly how we do a shotgun start here.
And here we go.
All right, all right, all right. Gentlemen, start your engine!
Greetings and welcome to another edition of the Shotgun Start. Today is Monday, April 29th. Shane, how are you doing?
Andy, I think I'm finally recovered from the latest episode of y'all's podcast because I wrote it on Twitter. It was some of the hardest I've laughed in a long time. We've talked a lot about consuming golf content. I've been a Shotgun Start listener for a very long time. I think basically since you guys kicked the pod off, the old stuff that you guys are able to bring back cracks me up every time. But holy shit, was that amazing. And it was some of the hardest. Oh my goodness. I laughed. I went back and re-listened to it. So it's always an honor to be on this program, but it's even more of an honor after the momentum you guys must be riding right now from Cochran Corner.
I have a little theory. Brendan is obviously off here. He's
gotten swept up in the Cochran Corner.
Well, I think he was afraid of what was coming for him with Cochran. The way that Cochran Cole team performed this week, they missed the cut, but they made a double bogey on 17. It was going to be an all-time round. Unfortunately, this week we had no clue what was going on, who was hitting what shot. It was impossible to track anything. I was on a plane today. Speaking of which, I had a question for you. Being somebody from Texas, I had a question for you.
But, I think I know where it's going. But then the answer, anyways, just so you know, is going to be a yes. But go ahead.
I'm on this plane. I'm trying. It's Sunday. My friend Zach Blair is leading the tournament in contention, and I have no clue what's going on. I'm literally waiting for them to finish holes to know what's going on. The Wi-Fi, of course, can't stream it, but we didn't know what happened. So Cole and Cochran, early drama. Cole and Cochran, the dynamic duo, Eric Cole playing with 65-year-old Russ Cochran, who Brendan might have taken a run at on Wednesday. I thought he was pretty respectful, but we found out from other friends in golf media that they took offense to it. The broadcast on PGA Tour Live was really going at us. But anyways, they're about to make the cut, and they make a double on 17.
I was just going to say, as a broadcaster, the pregnant pause of the podcast was one of the great pregnant pauses in TV streaming history. Podcast. It was so good.
I happened to clip this just for this pod. I've learned this new way to drop audio in to this format that, this is revolutionary. But on PGA Tour Live, Russ Cochran's warming up, and they're taking a run at Brendan. So here...
Yeah, Russ Cochran can take anybody that hosts a podcast, give them two aside, and play them for their car podcasts.
I mean, so it's just perfect. It's so perfect. Now, a former U.S. amateur champion that hosts an extremely popular golf podcast may have sent me a note just asking who'd mentioned that on the telecast, because both he and his co-hosts, who's almost won the USGA four ball a couple times, they felt like maybe they were being looked over.
Over a lot of people.
Well, I was going to ask you this. This is one of the first things I was going to ask you on the pod. How many podcasters would you bet your own hard-earned money on against our guy, Mr. Cochran? Again, this is no disrespect to the guy. It's just for his situation.
Here's the thing. I think Cochran's probably operating at like a +3, +2 level.
Yep.
Like this is not this. I think it would be a very good match with a lot of podcasters. I think it depends on the course. From reports, Cochran's flying at 230. So if we could stretch him out.
He's 60. Andy, he's 65. Like, you're supposed to hit it that short at 65. Like, this isn't some anomaly. He's not some tour guy hit at 240. He's 65 years old. He's 5 years away from being 70. Like, this is what normal 65-year-olds do.
So here's my point, is if we could stretch him out at, like, 7,200, I'd feel pretty good. But if you get Russ Cochran on a 6,100-yard course, I don't want any part of him. I don't want any part of a proven tour, a guy that won the Western Open. I want nothing to do with him around the greens and with wedges in the hand. I want nothing to do with him. But if
not
I can stretch
not
him out,
there. No.
If I can stretch him out, I can make him have lumber in every hole where I'm hitting irons. I think I have a chance.
Like he would absolutely, like, if you were doing that voiceover, I think it was Katrick that did it, who I love. I think if you were doing that again, you might have said on a par three course, he would crush every podcaster that ever lived. And I would 100% agree with that.
Podcast.
I mean, it's such a great line. And again, like, I love Katrick. It was very well-meaning. I mean, what he was saying was this dude's game, he's played 600 PGA Tour events. Like, people always assume they could beat anybody because they can shoot even par. But to your point, Andy, on a PGA Tour level golf course, his situation is going to be a little bit different.
So Cochran and Cole, I mean, they almost made the cut. They made a double on 17.
It's amazing.
We have to wonder, what did Eric Cole do? What did he shoot? What was he? How well was Eric Cole playing for the ability to have Cochran, who, by reports on the ground, was struggling to, like, to read putts, to get down to read putts?
I mean, I'm going to be 65 before I know it, and I'm going to be listening back to this going, these guys are such assholes. But it is... It is just part of it. I mean, I think the point that was missed with what poor Ath was saying with that whole rant, which again is one of the more beautiful moments in golf podcast history. The rant is more about the PGA Tour, and I'm going to use the word allowing a 65-year-old in the field of your, you know, biggest event of the week. You know, in theory, the biggest golf event in the world, you know, if you want to make the case, considering it's a PGA Tour event. I think that's maybe more of what Porath was saying than taking digs at the actual guy, because again, he's done a ton in his career and he's playing 600 PGA Tour events is incredible. I mean, this is not something to laugh at, but I think it's more that there is a 65-year-old out there that's, you know, hitting at 235 and he's trying to play. And it would have been so good if they'd have made the cut. I would have loved it so much.
One of my favorite things about just PGA Tour, regular, non-big PGA Tour events and living on the West Coast, is that without a doubt, every Thursday, Friday morning, I wake up and when I open Twitter or X, I have like a few mentions that have clips from PGA Tour live coverage, which I love. And to see this one, this was an all-time morning. I mean, I was like dying of laughter on the couch. I was up before my wife walked out. What are you laughing at? I was dying because it wasn't just the audio. It was Cochran on the range at a PGA Tour event looking like he was like the swing speed so different than everybody else
totally.
On the range. So anyways, that's enough.
By the way, I'm proud of myself for jumping into the unenviable task of trying to fill in for Brendan Porath. But I will say he's got to be proud that we've spent almost 10 minutes opening the podcast talking about Cochran, who missed the cut on Friday, who by the time people listen to this hadn't played competitive golf in 3 days. This is great. This is very on brand.
All right. Well, let's move on.
Podcast.
We'll move the podcast on here.
How long are you going to use that for, by the way?
A long time. I think it's going to become a staple. We got to figure out what we're going to use. I want to get it into the intro somehow. I'm not technically skilled enough to get that into the intro. But I was going to ask you, what's the difference between Dallas and Fort Worth? I asked this question about Minneapolis and St. Paul. You're a Texan. We've got tournaments coming to Dallas and Fort Worth. I guess that's why it's prescient. But can you describe to me what's... what's different? You know, is there a noticeable cultural difference between Dallas and Fort Worth? Am I typecasting if I say just the Metroplex?
Yeah, I think Fort Worth has always been the more relaxed, you know, brother or sister in this scenario. You know, it's always like where you'd go to Joe T. Garcia's to get margaritas if you were underage. It's where, you know, you'd go to the whatever the Stockyards, whatever they call it. Like, there are these places in Fort Worth that were very relaxed and chill. Now, I haven't really spent a lot of time in the Fort Worth area since I was in college, which was a good amount of time ago now. But yeah, at the time, that was what it was about, versus Dallas being the massive big city that it is. The funniest part of all this is Dallas is, I think, one of the biggest, you know, kind of metroplexes in the world now, right? When you kind of extend into Arlington and Fort Worth and beyond. But yeah, I think that's what locals would probably say, is Fort Worth maybe is meant to be a slightly more relaxing atmosphere than what you'd find in Dallas.
I was talking to actually Brendan on the phone. I was like, oh, this is a perfect thing to talk to Shane about, because, you know, I don't think Dallas, like, anything about Dallas is my wavelength, you know?
Right.
And I say that as I appreciate difference. I like coming and seeing somewhere that's different than the way, you know, I would approach life in general. You know, in the airport, I was getting bodied around. I was like, what, can everybody just stay back? Can everybody just hang out? People were getting my space. On the roads, I was, you know, but anyways, I was wondering how Fort Worth related to that. And that's good. Maybe Fort Worth more my speed.
I would 100% say if you were going to move to the Dallas area, you would look in Fort Worth. I mean, you would look probably the Frisco area. Like, you would get away from Dallas for sure.
All right. Well, let's move on to the golf. Let's move on here. Rory McIlroy and Shane Lowry win a thrilling finish. Thrilling, but slow. Although very slow.
Slow
Gosh. Moving finish at the Zurich.
It felt like the end of some of these NBA games.
The drops. Just
so many, so long. You're like, let's get to the bottom of this. Like, this play is under further review. Like, I'm out. I mean,
I was dying at the Brem drop. The Brem drop it took so long for a sprinkler head. It was a sprinkler head drop.
I mean, Shane Lowry had missed a pretty good look at birdie a few holes prior. He'd hit that shot on 17 that Rory basically had no chance of getting the ball close on. And then he hits that Yankee shot into 18. So basically, he'd kind of had these consecutive bad swings in a row. The last thing you want to do is be sitting on a six-footer you got to make. And I mean, it was, Andy, I mean, it was, I don't know what the real time was. It had to have been 12 minutes. It literally had to be 12 minutes between Rory's pitch shot and him having to hit that birdie putt.
So Rory wins his 25th win of his career here. Earns his 25th win. Are you counting it? Shane Lowry is his first PGA Tour win since the Open,
it's
which
such,
I thought was, you know, thought was generous calling the Open a PGA Tour win. I always think that's generous.
I mean, all right,
I think it's safer to say it's his first win on the PGA Tour since he won a major.
Yeah, it's probably a better terminology to put in there. Can I say this, Andy? This is kind of a weird thing to say, but okay. For Rory, I almost don't really count it as a Rory win, because for Rory McIlroy, he's measured with the all-time greats, right? These PGA Tour wins that he's going to continue to accumulate, I mean, this is going to grow him into one of the most, you know, what, top 8, 10 successful golfers of all time, maybe top 5 if we're really talking about it. So for Rory, it's hard for me to say it's a full win or full PGA Tour win just because it's a team event. This isn't no knock to the event or to Rory in general. It's just, this, simply put, it's not a full 72-hole stroke play tournament or 4 full 5-day match play tournament. That being said, if the other guys would have won in the playoff, it would feel like a full PGA Tour win for them. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. No, actually it doesn't. I don't think I count this as a full PGA Tour win for anybody. I think we saw it too. I thought alternate shot's an amazing way for this event.
Such a great way to finish. They got to finish an alternate shot. Always.
Like, you cannot fake alternate shot. Like, you're coming down the stretch. And I think that, like, listen, like Zach and Patrick Fishburne, that was a really great story on that leaderboard that didn't have a ton of juice on it outside of Rory and Lowry. And I think, like, you saw how you can't guide in a win in alternate shot. And I thought, like, Zach and Pat, they, like, got a little bit tight. You could see it. Like, the chip shot on 17 was rough. And obviously, I think the big thing was the double on 9 that kind of derailed them coming off a couple birdies. They had a lot of momentum. But you see an alternate shot, it's just like nobody can hide. And I think that's the thing with the best ball and everything. I'd be, like, super curious if anybody had ever done any data on, like, score variance in alternate shot versus when people play their own ball. I'd guess that the variance is higher in alternate shot. Would you agree with that? Because it feels like it's just like a format where things compound.
Yeah, and I mean, you're harder to get in your rhythm. You got to lean on a partner. You've got to think about a partner. I was thinking about the Lowry putt on for birdie to win in the playoff, and I think it was Trevor, somebody said, you know, he makes these 33% of the time on the PGA Tour, this length of a putt this season. And I was thinking that number's got to go down here because, A, obviously it's a putt to win the golf tournament, but also he's trying to win the golf tournament for Rory McIlroy as well, and that's a lot of pressure on the shoulders of somebody like Shane Lowry, right? Because again, kind of going back to, I know we're joking a bit about the PGA Tour wins and does it count or not, but that's a, I mean, again, this is like a historical marker for Rory. It's another win on his quest to 30 and 40.
25 on tour, yeah.
Yeah, it's a big, big number to tick off. So, you know, I mean, I just think it's probably harder to be as normal in terms of the way you putt and the putting speed you hit putts with and maybe some of the aggressive lines you might take, knowing that there's somebody else involved and some other caddy involved that maybe somewhere in your brain changes things a little bit.
Yeah, I think so too. It's such a hard format to get kind of comfortable in. And I think, like, winning a golf tournament, the hardest thing to do when you're on Sunday, or, you know, especially you get deeper in a tournament, is staying comfortable. So you throw those two together. I'd love for this event to be all alternate shot. I think that'd be super fun. I said that once to a player, and they said, well, they need to get somebody to show up, you know, insinuating that the tour pros wouldn't show up if it was all alternate shot.
So, all right. So, I mean, I did not watch a lot of this golf tournament this week, and I'll be honest with you, or this week in general. I mean, if you want to talk about monster truck rallies on Sunday, I can
include
talk to the NBA playoffs. I'll talk about that with you, but I didn't watch a ton, but I watched enough. And so the format is it best ball? What's so the second day? Alt shot, best ball.
Yeah, it goes best ball, alt shot, best ball, alt shot.
So this kind of goes back to one of my biggest complaints about LIV and the team side of LIV. And that's that they drop scores. And this goes back to you're a professional at your job. You're a professional athlete. College drops scores. Amateur golf drops scores. Pro golf does not need to drop scores because, in theory, all these guys are pro golfers. And I think having I think everybody's score should count in a team event on LIV. I think it's crazy that they can drop scores. Again, this is because I think it matters. It matters who your team is. It matters who your quote-unquote worst player is there, right? And I think for this, these guys are so good and they're so skilled, and PGA Tour professional golf is so deep, I want to see them challenged more than I want to see them be able to hide a bit. And to me, for this level of golfer, best ball, you can even hide a little bit. So I'm with you. Alt shot all the way through, or do something else like worst ball or cumulative score combined. I mean, I just feel like the best ball portion for this level of pro almost is too easy at this point. It almost feels like what a casual group of golfers might think scramble feels like, you know?
Yeah. I playing four ball events is always nice because you do feel like once you've hit like three or four birdies, you're like, you know what? I've done my part today.
Hey, Andy, when you birdie that first hole in best ball, when you make the first birdie, it's just the world of relief off your shoulders. Like, yo, man, you make like a 20 footer on one. I remember four ball qualifying years ago. I played with my buddy Ashton at Poppy. And it was rainy and nasty, nasty. And I drove it in that right fairway bunker on one. One's that par five, you know?
Yeah.
I drove it in the right fairway bunker and hit legitimately one of the best tournament golf shots I've ever hit in my entire life. I hit 3 wood out of the fairway bunker to like 25 feet. and two putt birdie. And I walked off it like we'd qualified, you know, which is probably not the right mentality to have. But I just remember thinking to myself, I hit a six shot. I made a birdie out of the gate. Like, we're cruising. And then, of course, I didn't play well the rest of the day, which is, again, part of the reason that I didn't play well, probably. But I'm with you. The early birdies are birdieing a lot of holes. You feel like a lot of relief.
I was playing with a buddy. This buddy was like, is very, very good player, like a very noted player in the amateur circuit. And I made like three birdies in my first six holes. And I just was like, you know what? I don't have to do anything the rest of the day.
You got it, buddy. I did my part. You needed three birdies out of me. You got it, man. Let's go.
It was the best feeling in the world, just being completely content. But that's like, that is like, it speaks to what the best ball is relaxing. And I guess like it does fit. And I think this event's been beat up.
Yep.
And I think it fits, though, like the week. And this is maybe the problem with the tour having so many events. They have so many events that this week doesn't get like enough shine. Like, I think you heard Rory in his presser after talk about, like, you know, it's been a fun week. We've gotten to hang out. We've had a lot of great meals. It's like, yep, it's a relaxing event in a like world class food and nightlife city. If you're a player, this should be an event that would be like a fun one to go do. Like, I've always thought, like, wow, it would actually be fun to go cover that event, because like I could go get some really good food and like hang out in one of my favorite cities in America to visit, New Orleans. Like, and like, that's the problem when you have so many events, is that like an event like this doesn't get as much kind of credit, and players skip it, even though it's like super close to like where a ton of players live. It's close to Florida. It's close to Texas. So it's a, you know, I do think there's a place for this. I think that they need to figure out like how the FedEx Cup standings work with it. You shouldn't get 500. I was just praying. Ramey and Trainer set the mark. They're out there. All of a sudden it looks like they might win. And all I could think about, all I could think about was Martin Trainer's going to get another 2-year exemption. Another one. I mean, we've already seen this movie play out. I saw No Leg Up posted something about Data Golf. Like, they have the Data Golf stats, like that he's never, ever had a stretch of golf that's been an average PGA Tour player. Like, you should not get a 2-year exemption from this event.
I mean, I would 100% agree. I mean, again, this goes back to, this is one of those events that feels like it's a ton of fun to play in. It's not as much fun to watch. I do think on Sunday it's a great watch. When it's that busy and that's packed and you're watching alternate shot, I do think Sunday, I think obviously having Rory involved helped a lot. And I think watching that interaction, like, Rory was so good at doing those subtle, the consoling of Shane Lowry. Like, he hit that shot on 18. If you saw, Rory ran up to him and started walking side by side with him. Like, those little things to remind him that this is supposed to be fun. I say this a lot on golf trips. You know, when you have the buddy that's playing like shit on the golf trip,
yeah,
and he's sulking and he's in a bad bummer mood, I'll go up to him sometime and go, hey, man, just a reminder that you're doing this for fun. Like, this is the fun part of your life. So if you're going to be bummed out because you didn't play well, then you got to figure out something else that's going to be fun, because now this has become stressful too. I just love the way the interactions and the team interactions go both positively and negatively. Do you see the Hubbard reaction?
I think they should ban the players reading each other's putts. It just slows things down.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I don't know what these guys are doing either. It's like, you read putts for a living. You do this 40 or 30 times or 30 tournaments a year by yourself. Why do you need help on this? Like, do you think that getting another voice in your mind when you're trying to hit a putt for a lot of money is going to help you?
Like, you're your best friend in the world. Like, your literal best golfing friend, if you're a pro golfer, doesn't know as much about the way you hit putts as you and your caddy do, right? So, like, no matter...
I even think caddies reading putts is a bad idea.
Well, I mean, I think it can be very helpful if the caddy's a great green reader, right? But again, that caddy, who in theory has been with you for a long time,
yeah, that's true,
if you're a professional golfer, knows the way you hit putts. Like, a club caddy or a random caddy at a resort for you and I going out there, when they give you those speed reads on the first couple holes, it's like, yo, man, you've never seen me hit a putt in my life. Like, you don't know if I'm a guy that takes breakout and hits them firmly and doesn't mind the four footer coming back, or if I'm somebody that never wants that putt and I lag them up there kind of like we used to see Bubba do, you know? I mean, like, there's a two totally different ways to putt. I just find it so funny when it's like, you know, like 95% left edge on the second green. I'm like, man, this guy's got a lot of confidence in my putting, more confidence than I do.
I had a putt. I played around in the last, 9 months. I was on the first green. I was over the putt. I had addressed the putt. I'm like standing over looking at the ball. And I'm thinking it's like right center. And a caddy goes cup out right.
Oh, gosh. So bad. You're over the putt. You're over the putt.
About to hit it.
Unbelievable.
And I was like, I was like jarred. So then I'm in my head, I'm like, wait, am I underreading this? I played it like a ball out. It didn't move.
Of course.
But like, to the caddy's credit, he did give me a read the rest of the day.
All right. So I got a little, this is a popular podcast. I got a little PSA to every golfer out there. This is a little PSA for you on Monday morning for you. Maybe Monday afternoon. I don't know when you listen to this podcast.
This is a Monday morning golf advice.
This is golf advice without a question being asked. This is me giving you golf advice. Never offer putting advice to anybody on the planet that doesn't ask for it. Never do it. If they ask you for advice or what does this putt do, then you can jump in. Free reign, say whatever you want. But we never need you to say anything about a putt if you unprompted. It drives me freaking crazy when I have a putt uphill or downhill and you're getting into the putt. And a buddy of yours or the member that has you out there is like, hey, this one's pretty fast. It's like, I'm aware it's going to be fast, but 9 times out of 10 now, I'm leaving it 5 feet short because you just said that, right?
Well, this goes to my theory. So I have this theory to not think about speed. I execute on this theory. I never think about speed with putts because I believe that no shooter in basketball, good shooter, is like, I'm 26.2 feet away from the hoop, so I need to shoot it harder. It's like, I've hit enough putts in my life that if I walk around, if I feel the green, I know exactly how hard to hit the putt. I don't need to think about the speed, and it makes it simpler. So, yeah, when somebody's like, it's uphill and slow, I'm like, it enters my brain. It's like the worst thing anybody could say to me.
Totally.
Then all I'm thinking about speed, and I never think about it. But anyways, back to the Rory talk.
Back to Zurich.
Rory, to go on your point about like the good chatter, Lowry hit that shot. He was like flabbergasted in the playoff. It came up short and he's in the bunker. And Rory's like, that's a great leave. That's a great leave, though. And it's like that type of conversation, right? That positivity. And I think that is, I always say this at our events, which we play alternate shot in, is that alternate shot is the only real true form of team golf in golf. Yep, like that is totally the format where you really, when you play alternate shot and you're playing for, you feel like you're playing a team competition, because you like the beauty of golf for a lot of people is you don't have to worry about anybody else screwing it up for yourself. You know, it's amazing how many of the high, like the great players, when you ask them, like, why did you play golf? It's like, well, I like the fact that I didn't have to rely on teammates, too.
Yep.
You know, like, you hear that so many times. But alternate shots, the one time, and I think that's probably why it makes a lot of these guys uncomfortable, it's the one time that it's a real team format.
Speaking of that, are we doing the USGA four ball or not? This is a recent situation we've been texting about.
Maybe. I'm trying to, yeah. I mean, Maybe that late in the year qualifier.
All right, we do the one when I've played no golf for a month and a half. Perfect. All right, I'll be good. I'll try to bring
that out beforehand. You could come out beforehand. We could really round into form.
Andy's trying to make
form.
Me play in December when I live in Connecticut.
You're gonna tip our hand on where we're playing.
Is there only one in December?
I don't know. There's not many.
Maybe November. Never mind. Delete that.
Hey, do you think this is, you know, I don't want to take away anything here. Is this the least consequential win in Rory McIlroy's career. Just in terms of stake. So he's won in my counting off his wiki page, you know, where they do these double counts a lot of times. I got 36 wins, including if for European Tour, PGA Tour, and I'll give him the Australian Open as a counter.
I don't think it's inconsequential. I mean, I think it's a big win for Rory. I think he needed to see something positive happen. I mean, I think it feels a little like the final round in 22 at the Masters, where he didn't win, but he played great at a place he hasn't played great at before.
And he
kind of capped off. And he had fun. This looked like Rory having a lot of fun. Andy, you know how much I appreciate and like Rory McIlroy. I mean, he's like literally one of my favorite athletes that I've ever had the pleasure of covering in a lot of different ways. Rory's life as a professional golfer over the last, I don't know, what, 2 years now? I don't feel like you'd use the word fun a lot to describe it. Winning is fun, sure. Competing and contending in majors is fun. But for Rory, not winning those majors matters so much more negatively to his career than it does positively, right? Coming close at St. Andrews, coming close in L.A. We will think about those near misses more than we will his consistent play in the major championships. I think about the Ryder Cup last year. Rory looked like he had a lot of fun. Unfortunately for Rory and everybody in pro golf, after the Ryder Cup is basically your big break of the year now, right? You're not playing a ton of competitive golf after that. The 64 we saw him shoot at the Masters when he held out that bunker shot, he didn't go out there and win a whole bunch after that, but I think he played great golf following that finish at Augusta National.
I mean, after that Augusta National, it set off a really great run of majors and consistency. He played extremely consistent golf. I mean, I think, I'd have a hard time. I feel like some of the wins, like where, you know, he might, like even like this year, I don't want to besmirch the Dubai event that he won at the beginning of the year. But then, you know, it was a win, and then he comes over and it's like, you know, he's playing on a different tour. I think this was, as you said, this could jumpstart a really good run of golf from Rory McIlroy. Sometimes you need to have some good things happen on the golf course to get kind of the motor going. Like he's talked about, it feels like, you know, I address something, I fix something, and then something else breaks. Like he feels close.
Yep.
Maybe this was what he needed to kind of get going. And having something, an event that was a little bit more relaxed, really helped out there, you know?
Kind of goes back to what I was saying about him. It just seemed fun. Like, it seemed like he had fun for 4 days, which is, like, all you're looking for if you're at this point in his career, having fun and winning. Talk about that mix for a guy like Rory right now. Again, you think about drinking those two cocktails. It hadn't happened a lot for Rory over the last couple of years. And so I think, again, this is right before, Andy, the big stretch for professional golfers, right? This is the big stretch for the PGA Tour players with all the majors coming up in a very, very hurried time.
He's got a signature event coming up at Quail Hollow, which he likes more. The better golf course than Royal County Down, according to him. But so he's going there next. I got to ask you. When Martin Trainer was standing over the putt, did you think it had a chance of going in?
My son was sitting there with me watching. He doesn't really care about golf. And I said, Henry, does he make it or not? And he goes, yeah, he makes it. And I looked at him and went, no, he won't. And again, just how this stuff goes, man. Like, this is not, I feel like sometimes fact and opinion kind of get muddied. It's just a fact. It's like, you're this person for a reason, and, you know, you're probably not going to make this massive putt after you've done a little bit of what you did in that playoff. I also think, AD, it's a hard thing to come back after what? Were they off the golf course for 2 hours, 2.5 hours?
I think it was like three almost.
That's a hard thing to jump back into. Like, right back into that competitive environment after you fire that great number.
And they probably didn't even think they were going to win. I think they said on the telecast,
totally
they
agree.
They thought they had no chance of winning. So it's like they shoot this, like, crazy round early Sunday morning. And then you got to come back.
Is there any other sport like that? Is there any other sport like this where you could be in the middle of action in the highest pressure moment that exists in your sport, and then you might have to take 3 hours off, not for weather or anything else? Like, you have to take 3 hours off and you might have to go play somebody. But that's what I'm saying is I feel like you can't include weather because everybody leaves at that point.
Yeah.
Rory and Shane Lowry just finished playing golf like 15 yeah. minutes before, you know, and they got to they're primed and ready. They just made birdie. Rory hit that fizzer. That was great. It's like, let's go back
out.
And these guys
so good.
Oh, so Ryder Cup reminiscent. I could see it like on the lie. It kind of looked like it was perched up, but he's so good at those shots. He might be one of the best in the world at that, like low hand, open face, clip it with the bottom grooves and just stop it. He is so good at that golf shot.
You know, that shot he hit the Ryder Cup, the opened up back foot lob wedge. I've tried to hit that so many times, and every time I try and hit it, I look like a complete idiot.
Do you hit it fat or do you just like, do you hit it kind of thin and it doesn't really check?
It like pops up in the air. I don't understand how he kept it so low.
So you're bouncing into it. That's probably why. You're bouncing into it and it's clunking up on the top of the face. It's such a hard shot to hit.
You know,
it's like an almost impossible golf shot.
I need to go see the chef, learn how to have him give me a recipe for it.
I don't think the chef's taking your calls, buddy. I don't think you guys have been too kind on this pod. I think he's probably hitting that ignore button right away.
But the thing about Trader, the view behind Lowry was incredible. Like behind Lowry yeah. and Rory when they did the replay, because it almost looked like they were celebrating before the putt was hit.
I mean, that's such a tough spot. You know, like that tournament got the best case scenario it could have got. And so shout out to the Zurich. I texted you something about the Zurich earlier in the week. I don't think it's true anymore. I actually like Sunday. I like Alt Shot. Like, I think you nailed it with the fact that it's just so busy right now in golf that it's hard for it to stand alone. I feel the same way about the match play tournament. If the match play existed buffered by a couple of weeks off, I think it could really shine. It's just tough to fly from an event into the golf course on Monday and have to play on Wednesday and do the whole round robin thing. I just think, again, that more time off would actually help these events a lot more.
Hey, you're a big sports fan. I think you track free agency a lot. I got to ask you a question. I'm biased here. I'm a Ball Frogs fan. Did we find our fourth? Is Shane Lowry? Is he going to take Terrell's spot now? He's got to be the guy, right?
He's got to be it. I mean, how do you not ride this wave of momentum? You got to do it. Like, frog him up. I mean, I don't know what y'all's. Do you have like a line you throw out there? Like
I think we
like
say just say rib, we say
line?
Ribbit.
Okay, you go ribbit. Yeah, just go up to him, maybe whisper
bring
in
him
his
into
ear.
The bring
like
him into
the
lily pad
or something.
It's onto, but not into onto. Bring him onto the lily pad.
Onto the lily pad. Hey Shane, you want to come on over here? You actually have like the physical one he can stand on.
So
it's ridiculous. I mean, he's gonna be on it. I think that's a great call.
Any other takeaways
I did the only other thing I was gonna say to you, and we touched on it a second, but the brim drop with the sprinkler. So that was the end of the Mavs game. Yeah, I think you were flying or you were in the air. You just landed or something.
No, I landed. I got to watch the last like five holes.
Oh, all right. So then you saw this. So the Mavs game was awesome at the end of the game. Okay. And I'm upstairs flipping back and forth.
Did the Clips win?
They won, but it was this like great last minute and a half. Harden was unbelievable in the last 90 seconds. I'm flipping back and forth to the basketball game. Like the NBA is not fast the last couple minutes.
Terrible.
I easily finished the last 2 minutes of that basketball game before they hit that putt. Before they hit the putt for birdie, it was a tremendous and substantial amount of time taken over that. I just feel like that. I feel like the players have to have, and they might have this, a rule symposium and say, it's on you guys to get these rulings correct. I know that they are scared. I know players are scared of people calling in on rules of issues, and I totally get that. And I get that's why they bring officials over. But you've got to almost say, we're eliminating call-ins once a rule is done. But cart paths, sprinkler heads, things like that, it just feels like
TIO, they take five minutes.
Like, these things are pretty easy to have figured out. I mean, you and I are playing golf. Like, we'd know what to do in the sprinkler situation, if it was a local rule, during that moment. I feel like we could take relief and be good to go. I just feel like the players fear the call-ins. So they wait for the rules officials, and I wish that we could maybe strip people of being able to call in outside of the moment it happened so we could speed this whole thing up a little bit?
Oh, I would say that, but then.
Podcasts.
You were waiting to push that for like 10 minutes. I could tell. You're sitting back waiting to push that.
I would zig the other way and just say, when you're playing for $10 million, there's a $10 million purse, the tournament can afford to have a rules official with every group that's just there, ready
also
to go.
Fine with that, too.
That's like, hey.
Fine with that, too.
Okay, drop right here. That's the drop. Drop right there. Like, or they, or maybe you take the ball out of the player's hands, and now the players just drop it themselves. Or the official goes and takes the drop for them. Take the skill out of dropping. I do think there is a skill in dropping. Maybe we should remove that from the game.
I mean, I think the rules official in every group makes a ton of sense, too. It's just whatever you got to do that can make us avoid and I will also say this, as a person that does TV a lot, and I know this is a different situation, but if it's on a Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and a rules issue's happening, we don't need to watch it. Just go to something else and, like, come back when the drop happens. I mean, Sunday, last group, guy makes this putt to win the golf tournament. I understand staying there, but a lot of the time I feel like we linger on these drops and rules deals. Like, let's leave and just holler at us and let us know what happened. Like, I don't need to watch that go on for 90 seconds on TV. There's just too much other stuff going on.
Hey, you know what makes things simple, especially when it's blustery out there, it was this week? Did you notice how windy it was?
Very windy. Very windy.
I bet some of those guys wish they had something that could tell them about the wind, which direction was going. And let me tell you, there has been a big revolution, evolution. We aren't starting a war or anything, but an evolution in rangefinder technology. Welcome to Bushnell Golf Pro X3 Plus. This is precision perfected, next level performance, and now it has wind. So the X3 Plus is the most powerful, precise laser rangefinder to date. And this is from Bushnell. They're the number one rangefinder in golf, and they're trusted by 98.6% of PGA Tour players. So most of those players, maybe not Trainer, would be using a Bushnell. So really, the thing you can do now is you can gauge the wind and the direction, the speed and the direction. You just have to connect the Pro X3 Plus to the Bushnell Golf mobile app, and you calibrate the rangefinder, and then you're going to get up-to-date wind data. So judging the wind has never been easier. It is a important aspect of playing well, especially, you know, when it's blowing the way it was today, where it was really blustery. So, if you want to get a Bushnell a Pro X3 Plus, visit bushnellgolf.com. So you can learn more there. You can find it there. Do you think a Bushnell would have helped these guys today?
I mean, judging the wind would have absolutely helped. I mean, that stuff, it was gnarly. It was like gusty, and that's just the hardest golf to play in, I think, when it's like unpredictable and blowing cross like that. You see the pros struggle so much to hit their lines. You know, like you saw it on 17, everybody was missing it right. You saw it on 18, everybody was bailing left. It's so hard to play in the crosswinds. I'm so bad at that, Andy, figuring out wind. So I might be an upcoming customer of the Bushnell Wind one, because that sounds like it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, you'll be up there in the Northeast. You'll be a different player. You know, you might make match play in the USAM because of that.
might not shoot 80, 82. Wasn't that windy in Colorado, to be fair?
Needed an altitude adapter too. You know.
Just Colorado. Don't be an idiot adapter.
One last note on the Zurich from me. It would have been so apropos. I don't want to feel like I'm burying Trainer here. It would have been so apropos that a man on his website that lists himself as a French socialist managed to crowbar a 2-year exemption in a team event where he could ride the coattails of another.
Who is that?
Ramey, you know?
Oh, was that on his website?
On Trainer's website. He's a French socialist.
That's interesting to put that on website. How bummed are you for ZB? Because I know. I mean, obviously, seeing him that close and seeing how good they played on Saturday, that shot. I mean, that shot on 17 was just so hard. But I thought they had. I thought they were going to really have a chance to get in at 25, maybe even 26.
Yeah, It's tough. I mean, it just winning golf tournaments is really hard.
Really
and
hard.
I think like sometimes we kind of overlook how hard it is when we're like, how's this guy? How come this guy hasn't won a major? How come this guy hasn't won in a while? There's 140 other guys trying to win that are all world-class players. I thought that pairing, like you got, like it was like a great example of like a skill set pairing that worked really well, where you had Zach, who is the shortest player on tour, playing with one of the longest players on tour, a guy that struggles around the greens with Zach, who's one of the best around the greens. Like it was just, I thought that was like, that's the neat thing about alternate shot is you can pair these players. That, like, there's some strategy. I mean, like having Rory hit that tee shot on 18, that's a huge advantage.
Huge advantage. Huge advantage. I mean, playing with Hubbard in regulation, I think Colt Knows said it was 72 yards yeah. past him or something. But you know, I mean, that's like substantial difference.
Likewise with ZB, like he hit Fishburne hits the tee shot off 18. They have a chance because ZB can get home. And you know, yep. I think that's the neat thing about the format. I thought that was a cool pairing. I thought like for the tournament, it was a neat story of like two kids that grew up playing golf together in the mix. Would I love to see him get it done? Absolutely. You know, I still probably would have been yelling about the 2-year exemption. For those waiting to pop me about that, I don't change my principles based off my friends, you know. But yeah, it was great to see. I think like and just I don't know. I a mutual friend of ours was asking me for some ZB facts, and I just think like when you zoom out and you think about all the stuff that Zach Blair's accomplished, like building a golf course. Building a golf club without being a billionaire, playing on the tour, like basically has been a tour player since he graduated. He has a merchandise business that's like really good business, you know? Like he's captivated this audience of people that buy his merchandise like the yep. second it goes up. Like the guy is like a Renaissance man, and I find it amazing. That he plays on tour and he competes on tour and he keeps keeping his card despite being like the shortest player on tour. I mean, it's an unbelievable feat that he's been able to keep his card and play on tour for as long as he can, despite being, you know, not a long hitter in an era of power. And yeah, on top of everything else he did, he built a golf course. He fundraised. He raised the money he needed. He oversaw construction. He built an incredible culture. Like all that stuff takes time. Like most of these people can't be bothered to think about anything but their golf game. And this guy's done all this other stuff. I think it's, you know, I'm friends with him. Obviously I'm biased, but it's like the guy has an amazing story.
Yeah. I mean, you're kind of waiting for the big profile piece to be written about him because I mean, this is a different way to do it. This is a different way to think. You know, he's one of those guys. Like I had dinner the other day with a friend of mine that I've always been impressed by with the way he goes about his business. He's very successful, but he's always tackling different things. It's not just like he's not just finance or he's not just, you know, real estate. Like he does a whole bunch of different things and he gets so excited about all those different things. And I think you're spot on with ZB in that regard is like he's done all these really cool things that anybody involved in golf would see as extremely successful. The Buck Club, extremely successful, right? Tree Farm, extremely successful. Now, to your point about the PGA Tour career, and we're like joking about Cochran off the top, but having a PGA Tour card for 50 starts, 100 starts, 200 starts, 300 starts, like this says a lot about who you are and your focus and your push to be better and trying to perfect smaller parts of your game that maybe aren't as good as everybody else's. Zach has been extremely successful in so many of these cool circles, and I think maybe he doesn't get enough credit for that. And to your point, being a good PGA Tour player still. Like, he's had some great runs at some big events over the last couple of years.
Hey, almost won the Travelers last year, you know?
Yep.
But yeah, great event for that team. I think just in general, maybe this event gets dogged a little bit too much. I have been one that kind of dogs on it on occasion, but when I think about, like, it does always seem to present a pretty interesting Sunday. Hey, we gotta talk about other events. You know, we're been at,
well,
50
hold on,
here.
Andy, can I say one more thing about Zurich? And this is my last point on Zurich. Is, I mean, you and I are two types of people that are always trying to. We're always talking about ways to refine something or make it a little better, especially in golf tournaments and things like that. What we saw this week and what we saw with the winners and with Zach and everybody in that regard is there needs to be a reason why they're playing together. I think it makes the story more compelling. It makes the golf more interesting. And it seems like they play harder and for something bigger than just the Zurich and the week that it is. And so maybe it's to make the field a little smaller for this event, but to make the pairings and the teams a little more impactful. Is there a hook? Did you play college golf together? Are you guys from the same town? I know this isn't the easiest thing to do. Not everybody has a hook, but these guys do know each other pretty well.
Podcast together.
Do you record a podcast together? I mean, but like there are enough hooks out there to where these teams aren't so random. And you do get the Zach Blair pairing of high school friends that played golf forever. You do get the Rory pairing of two dudes that have known each other since they were teenagers. Like, these things matter more than just that week. And I think it helps push the story along in an event that's kind of still looking for that identity a little bit.
You know what could be a pairing?
What's that?
I don't know if you've heard, but JT and Spieth are friends.
Honestly, I know you're joking, but they should play. You know, you know what I'm saying?
When you talked about friends, I was like, God, that was.
But yeah, I mean, I guarantee you that they're going to be more invested in that event than two random dudes that get paired together because they both signed up for the tournament. That's my thoughts on it.
You know what event had that going on, had that dynamic going on this weekend?
What's that?
Liv. I think that Liv's team format has been, you know, kind of like made fun of. It's been dragged through the mud. People have been like, does it have a reason to be here? I was thinking about this. It turned out pretty cool. Obviously, they have the Australian fans are so starved for high level golf, and I don't think that this tournament has worked. Because the product's great. I think it's more that they went to a market that has through the roof demand for high level professional golf, and they've delivered something that is pretty high level professional golf. Like, it's not a major championship, but you get big time players rolling through there. And for the, I think, like, really the first time in LIV Golf history, the team format had real identity and real meaning, because you had the Australian team beat the South African team, the Rippers beat the Stingers in a playoff, and one of the oldest, you know, one of the biggest rivalries between two sporting countries is Australia and South Africa, who are like huge rivals for rugby and cricket. And here in Australia, you have the South Africans square off against the Australians. I thought it worked really well. I think what it showed and it goes to just your point, when teams mean something, when it's the Ryder Cup, when it's Europe versus the US, it means it has meaning. People are playing for something. It really works. When team golf doesn't work is when it's like the Four Aces versus, you know, Torquay, two teams that don't really have any, you know, meaning, the High Flyers versus the Magic Sticks, you know. Those, that doesn't work. But when it's Australia versus South Africa, it really makes sense. And it worked. And it was obviously a great atmosphere. Again, I do not think that Australia is just this live crazed country. It's a golf crazed country that's been devoid of great golf at great times of the year. And this event hits on all that. And listen, like, part of starting something fresh and being something new is identifying flaws in the market and exploiting them. And clearly, Australia, not having big time pro golf in Australia, is a flaw in the market that LIV has corrected with the Adelaide event. estimated 94,000 people attended. That was according to Liv. And Brendan Steele wins the individual. He made five birdies in a row at one point. But Shane, did you catch at least the highlights of this?
No, I did not catch the highlights of it. I did see the scoring, which seemed like it was incredibly low. But I mean, I think you nailed it. It's a country that loves to watch golf and is obsessed with golf and has great players. And Liv has the best Australian golfer in the world right now on their team. So it's like he's there to be your star. He plays well enough to where his team wins. And people are excited to go out there and watch him. Andy, I know you're a big spread guy. Did you see the spread? All right, so 53 under one. Two teams tied at 53 under, okay? 12th place was 30 under. So that's, you know, not that far behind. Did you see what 13th place finished?
It's the Magic Sticks. They're a disaster. These are all the guys. This is why the league needs to get the contracts out. Those guys need to be relegated, all of them.
Andy, they finished 19 shots behind the next finisher. They finished at 11 under par, and 12th place was 30 under.
That is how many shots behind the winner were they?
42.
What a joke! How embarrassing is that for like Henrik Stenson, Lee Westwood? Those guys were at one point arguably the best player in the world during a period. And Ian Poulter, who was like a top 10 player in the world at one point, that's embarrassing.
I mean, I look at that stuff, and I know you look at that stuff where it's like, what's the outlier here? And they are the massive outlier, like not even close. Everybody else was relatively bunched. You know, I mean, eighth place was 40 under, winning is 53 under, and you finish at 11. That is a massive drop off.
Bad news. So
there you go.
It's I thought this was a good moment for Liv's team format, but I think it's just more one of the things that I think golf has to reconcile here, if they want to come together, is what happens to Liv. And you know, maybe this event shows what it could be in terms of team golf. If you had some team golf in the, maybe it's in the silly season. I don't know.
Andy, I got a question for you. What is the best case scenario for Liv Golf in terms of a champion in the next three major championships this year? Like who's the best case scenario for their product in terms of winning a major? I think the easy answer is Brooks, but I'm just wondering if that's what you're going to say.
I actually think it's like Taylor Gooch if he won the PGA.
Okay. That's actually a pretty good point.
Right? Like if Taylor Gooch, who's been this, you know, cry for me, you know, like I'm being mistreated, even though I took a giant bag of money and helped divide golf. I'm being mistreated by the majors. And I'm one of the best players in the world, and I'm not in these majors. If he were to win the PGA, which he's been invited to, I think that would be like the best case scenario for them being able to argue for more spots in majors. That's a good point. Yeah.
You'd go non-major winner, basically. You'd go with somebody that has played well. Like, I mean, Neiman would be a name you could probably throw in there as well, but yeah. I think the Taylor Gooch one's even a better point because, again, he's been the one arguing for the spots.
Yeah, and Brooks, like, when he wins, he won't even acknowledge that he plays on Liv. You know? Like, I win majors. Yeah. I think he said something to the lines of, like, I win majors for myself. It's not based off what tour I play on, right? Like, you know, if you're Liv, you want a major winner that you can trumpet out there as like your own. And Brooks feels like a hired gun to a lesser extent. I think Rahm probably feels similar where, Rahm keeps throwing Liv under the, kind of subtly throwing Liv's format under the bus. You know, I wonder how that whole relationship's going to continue to go. One thing I wanted to call out here, and we're getting to the end here. So LPGA Tour is still going on. It's over. Hannah Green won. Hannah Green beat Maja Stark. Hannah Green, the Australian, playing well at Wilshire. I think she's played well there in the past. So she beat Maja Stark by three. She shot a 66 in the final round, which I think might, or outside of Sagstrom's 65, was the low round of the day. So really good win for Hannah Green. Obviously, world-class player. Awesome event at Wilshire. It was great having that on in primetime this week.
And she's won twice in the last 2 months now in the LPGA. So obviously playing some great golf, and as we get into major season on that side as well.
On the Korn Ferry Tour, I think Whiting won again.
Let me see. I'm looking right now.
Yeah, I can't pull it up that fast. I got too many things in my hands. I should have had this. See, this is why, you know, this is the stuff Brendan handles. You know, he's got all these things. I don't have to process.
He won again. Let me read you his scores for the week. Are you ready for this?
Oh, that was a banana land event.
All right. 62 round one, 63 round two. Played kind of mediocre on Saturday, shot 65, 63 today, 31 under.
That's bananas.
I mean, that is incredible. That is so low. I don't care how easy the golf course is. I think he made 33 birdies for the week.
How about 21 under gets you a T9.
Hey, you want to play pro golf? Sure, it's going to be a lot of fun. If you finish at 10 under, it's T70. Thanks. Enjoy.
It's crazy. It's bananas. A little bit of news. Illinois did not win the Big Ten tournament this year. Do you know when the last time they didn't win the Big Ten golf tournament was? Men's Big Ten golf tournament.
Has it been a decade longer?
8 years. They had won 14 of the last 15.
Unbelievable.
So they lost. Northwestern wins. Congrats to Chicago. Of course, Chicago's Big Ten team, Northwestern, ends the drought. Not Illinois, not the state school. Chicago's Big Ten team, Northwestern, the Wildcats.
Shout out to Fitzy.
Yeah, Fitzy's squad. They're probably partying. Other quick note, there was Dave Shadlowski of Golf Digest did a big NBC takedown piece about the golf coverage. There are some explosive quotes in this. I don't think we need to dive in that far. I think the general gist, this podcast has talked about kind of like what's going on over there a lot. One staffer, this is a couple quotes from the article. One staffer joked that pretty soon we're going to do artist renditions of coverage as opposed to showing actual shots with the camera.
Hey, listen, maybe I was ahead of the time because I used to draw pictures like 15 years ago on Twitter. So maybe that was my calling the whole time.
It ended with the current deal on which Fox still pays 30% expires in 2026. The exclusive negotiating rights period between the USGA and Comcast begins later this year and then is thrown open in 25 if the sides can come to an agreement. Golf viewers would be right to ask how much Sam Flood, who's the head of golf for NBC, even cares. So the article really kind of like centered on the struggles of NBC and how, as of right now, we don't know who the broadcaster for the U.S. Open, one of the biggest events coming down who the analyst will be. They've been trying out, obviously, Kisner, Luke Donald. In the article, it said that they couldn't come to an agreement with Ogilvy. Obviously, the Azinger thing happened where he didn't even get, he tried to counter offer and they said no deal, steals off the table, and that was over. So anyways, that's where they are. I have heard on the flip side that they do know who the U.S. Open analyst will be. Who knows? It might be Faxon, but I'm sure we'll hear about that in the coming weeks. One other thing. Is this the most impressive thing that happened in golf this week? Bernhard Langer announces that he's coming back to the Champions Tour at age 66, only 3 months after an Achilles tear.
It's unbelievable. I mean, he's new. He's who Aaron Rodgers wishes he was, right? Isn't that who this guy is? This is who he is.
Better
Aaron Rodgers
athlete.
Wishes he was Bernhard Langer. I mean,
he's 66.
Some people just, like, my dad's going to work until he dies. Like, that's my dad. He's just going to work till he dies. He does nothing else to do. Work is what he does. This is the same way, I think, for Bernhard. I just feel like he's going to play competitive golf until he legitimately can't walk out there and tee it up anymore. And he is so freaking impressive, man. He might be the most impressive golfer in the world over the last 20 years, really, when you think about it.
I don't know if I can get there. I don't have that much respect for the Champions Tour. I do have a lot of respect for what he's done. And to come back from an Achilles, 3 months? 3 months? That's nuts.
Was he in the final group of the Masters on a Saturday like 6, 7, 8 years ago?
Yeah, maybe not the final. I think he was the second to last, right?
Okay.
Wasn't when Smiley and George or Smiley Kaufman was in the mix, was that?
No, that would have been 2015. Let me see here.
Maybe 2016.
I just remember he played incredibly well, and he was maybe. I mean, 2014, he finished T8, so maybe that's what it was.
I feel like we're just getting old, and time's condensing on us.
Well, that happens. Happens yeah. for everybody. Seeing if we have him through two rounds here, and it wasn't anything too crazy through two, but he was hanging around. I don't know what year it was, but it was very impressive, and he's a very impressive guy. And yeah, 3 months is crazy. What was he doing?
What was he doing? He might have been back in Germany doing the Kobe the what did Kobe used to do with the knee? He did the blood cycles, right? Something
like
that.
They spin the blood. Is that what they did or something like that? Isn't that what it was called?
I think so. I think he used to go to Germany for that. So, all right, Shane, what do you got anything coming up?
Not really. I'm playing some golf. I got US Open qualifier in a couple weeks. That's about it. And then I'll be at the PGA doing some stuff for CBS and ESPN. And then I will, I think we got KFT back on TV early June. So
you're going to Holla?
I'll be there. Did you see the hats Poor Ass sent us a minute ago?
Holla.
Where is he at though? There a lot of big lettering on the hats. It'll fade. Always a pleasure. Excited to see you soon. And thanks for having me as always. It's always a treat.
Thank you for coming on.
Podcast.
Had to get one more.
You know what's the best part about you putting it in is it takes you like 8 seconds to hit the button, which makes it even better. Oh, by the way, I got to tell you one. I don't know if we're still on or not.
Yeah,
I have
we're
one.
Still on.
All right. Let me give you a little feedback from a listener, being me. I loved what you did with the music on the latest pod when you played the music, like when you played the actual song. But you got to either bump down the music or bump up Poor Ass Audio so we can hear his mind going in real time, because that's one of the great parts of that whole series is Poor Ass kind of talking through it as you play the walk up song.
See, I knew there was going to be it's funny. I couldn't hear what he was saying because the music was playing so loud through my headphones.
Well, it wasn't just yours, buddy. I'm telling you, it was pretty loud. But I think just again, listen, we'll tone him down a little or tone Poor Ath up. But you got to hear Poor Ath walk through it himself. That's like one of the great moments about it. It actually got better every song. But I love that it got so professional that you found out a way to like plug the song in for walk-up music.
Listen, whenever we have a real producer that's not named Andy Johnson, maybe we could explore these big moments that we're missing out on, you know?
Yeah, I totally understand that. I get it for sure.
All right, we'll talk to you soon, Shane, and thank you for coming on again, and we'll talk soon.
Podcast.